Welcome in! Latest episode, That SEC Podcast, back with another edition of the Marler Monday. What's up, buddy? Chris Marler.
Oh, just already in the comments. Let's do this. We got 56 minutes.
Hey, at least Bama made it, right? You got to be happy about that.
I was very happy about that. I thought it was the right decision. I'm sure we're going to talk all about it. I'm very excited to go over all of the factual information on all sides, which seems to be something that a lot of people are choosing not to do. And yeah, that's about, I mean, Saturday they did everything they could to ruin the entire resume they built on the season. Cherokee Chooch, that's a really good point. I did say that. I was wrong about that one thing about your team.
Do you feel bad for Notre Dame?
No. Like, you want to start there?
Yes.
So I think Notre Dame should be in the playoff. Let me start by saying that. I think they are good enough to be in the playoff, and they are one of the 12 best teams. Here's the thing. You played two top 10 teams all year, and you lost to both of them. I have hated the way Notre Dame schedules most of their seasons forever. Like, you look at last year's season, they played at Purdue in week three, and they didn't have another true road game until the final weekend of the year or final weekend of the regular season against Southern Cal on November 30th. But like September 15th to November 30th did not have a true road game. They have for decades been catered to, gotten the benefit of so many different things that aren't like, not just that they've got the benefit, that aren't applicable or available to so many, if not all of the other teams and schools in college football. Like, we talk about brand bias, talk about conference bias, you know, Bama bias, SEC bias, whatever. There is not a program in this country that gets more things catered to them and them alone than Notre Dame. So for them to be left out of the playoff, I thought the committee handled it very poorly. I don't know why they waited till the very last weekend to be like, surprise, gotcha. I think they should, they're one of the 12 best teams to get in. But every single fucking time you line up their resume versus Bama's, Miami's, or even BYU, they had the worst resume. They had the lowest strength of schedule, the worst strength of record. They had the fewest wins against ranked opponents. They had the lowest opponent winning percentage for all the opponents they played this year. Mike, like, they went 10-2, and their opponent win percentage on the season was 5.23. Two of those losses came against teams that were 21-3 on the year. I mean, that means that they're the teams they actually beat, the opponent win percentage for the actual teams they beat was like 440. It was dog shit. It was terrible. And they have a lot of good players, and they got a real shiny helmet. But I'm so fucking tired of them getting to dip their toe in power four play whenever they want. And by the way, they picked the weakest fucking conference imaginable to like play half of their conference games with the ACC. It's a joke. And so I felt bad for those players at first. And then I saw 2 hours later, they decided to opt out of the bowl, which was such like a pussy move. But the thing that pissed me off more than anything, Mike, was the fact that while all this is happening and they're, you know, sobbing these crocodile tears all over social media, lo and behold, starting next year, they're the only team that has a deal in place that says if they finish ranked in the top 12, they automatically make the college football playoff automatically. And if they shift to 14 teams, well, buddy, guess what? Then they have to only finish in the top 13. No other team in the country gets that kind of favorability. None. And it's a fucking joke.
Yeah, we could be sitting here a year from now, Chris, where, you know, we let in some of these G5 teams and like number 10 gets left out because we got to put in number 12 Notre Dame. I mean, that's a reality we could be sitting in next year.
That was one of the other frustrating things of this, because like this was the loudest like argument and frustration and like reaction of anything that happened, right? The team that has the biggest complaint on the weekend is Georgia. And we can get into that in a second. Like the fact that they didn't move up at all, and Ohio State only dropped to 2. And again, it's not that those things are happening like in like a one-off situation. It's that they're happening, and then while they're happening, we're still having to hear this bullshit about SEC bias, SEC ESPN. Like they're in bed together. It's the only reason they got all these teams in. It's like Hunter Yurecek is the committee chairman. Tim Brando's going off today about how, yep, it's always like that. There's more SEC people on the committee than anyone else. No one talked about this last year when there was only two people with SEC ties on the committee a year ago, and three teams made it in comparison to SMU getting in. I think the fact that James Madison and Tulane both got in, that's a fucking joke. Like, that's just not good for the sport. And I think that, like, you will see that corrected sometime down the line. Because, Mike, they were so close to having maybe one of the most exciting and I wouldn't say even like talent-wise, but, like, you would have had just brand on brand on brand in a 12-team playoff if you had Notre Dame and then maybe BYU instead of James Madison and what do you call it? And then them facing Oregon on the road, them going to College Station, like Miami, like all those teams still making it. But here's the thing. The two G5 schools fucked that up for one. And then two, even with those 12 teams making it, and that's hypothetical scenario, Vandy is still not getting any fucking credit for their season. And it's almost the exact same parallel image of what you saw from Notre Dame.
It's disgraceful, isn't it? And Notre Dame could have fixed this a long time ago, Chris, had they joined a damn conference. Don't you agree with that?
Yeah. But like, and again, why would you though? Like that you have been giving every single thing. Look, I will get real fucking like on a soapbox about this. If we want to talk about historically speaking, like there's no other program that has Heisman Trophy winners that were on a 2-8 team for a fucking quarterback that threw 11 interceptions and three touchdowns in the same year that Jim Brown was in the running. There's no other team that has that. There's no other team that thinks that they're getting screwed over by television network deal with another conference while all of their games are being broadcast on NBC for the last 35 years. Like, and also there's no group that is more delusional about where their relevance and like in stance is in the current landscape of college football than Notre Dame, because this is a team that I think up until last year, they hadn't won a New Year's Six or a BCS level bowl since 1995 against Texas A&M. They got to play Georgia with a backup quarterback the day after a terrorist attack in New Orleans while Kirby Smart's dad was dying in the hospital. I hate that we are talking about this instead of, hey, by the way, Georgia got fucked. They should have been higher. I don't know why Oregon is at five. It's ridiculous.
Will you be so kind as to read Brodo's comments that I've thrown on the screen here?
Hook him in the butthole bowl, loser. Hell yeah, dog. Hell yeah.
Not a fan of Texas is Brodo.
Fair.
Hey, can you reveal behind the scenes how annoyed were you when I met up with you at the bar and for 2 hours said Vanderbilt's getting in over Alabama?
Oh, I was not annoyed by that at all.
Oh, okay. It was
but
more
I,
the
I
other
will
people.
Say that everyone else I was with was. That was a topic of conversation the next day. Yeah, it was a long day for a number of reasons, but also just like, you know, everyone had been drinking there. I think we all got to the bar at like 10 a.m. that day. We were walking out when you were walking in. I think we had been there. It was like around 3 o'clock. We had gotten there at like 10 a.m. So it was great to see you. I had a great time seeing you.
And you got screwed.
Yes, they did.
JMU.
I don't know who their best win is, but like
Tennessee.
Probably,
they're,
yeah.
They're getting hot. They were getting hot at the right time.
I mean, again, like I'm glad it went the way it did, but that game against Alabama, they could have been up 14-0 in the first quarter if they don't fumble inside the 10-yard line going in to score. The Texas game, I don't think, was as close as the score would indicate. But at the same time, Mike, they had the onside kick recovered and it went out of bounds. Like it, they came storming back in like garbage time in quotes, but they also had a real chance to recover that and then win. So I think you're right. Like, I think that you could look at this and say 10-2 Vandy this year is basically the same as 11-1 Indiana last year and played a much tougher schedule. I don't know what the best win is in comparison to some of the other teams, but it's crazy that we have allowed this much like chaos and also like lack of cohesiveness. I think like I don't understand. I didn't know until yesterday, Mike, that the actual committee each year, they just make up their own rules for what they're looking for and how they're ranking. It's not like the same, like, hey, in year one, we decided this is what we're looking for. And then this is the Bible and this is what we're doing. It's like some like the eye test, some like other stuff, some like butt stuff. Like all those things come into play, but it's just one. It's the whole thing is a fucking mess, man.
Is Joshua 24 fan correct? You've been going after Big J journalists on the Twitters.
Here's the thing, and I probably have tweeted at her too many times. Admittedly,
aren't you engaged?
That's not. It was part of being distracted to her. No, like my genuine frustration, and this is like I admittedly also don't know how to like turn it off because as soon as I see it, I'm like, don't argue with that person, Chris. Don't do it. Nope, got to do it. But my genuine frustration is like you know who I'm a fan of, like who I was a fan of growing up, and like what I get to do for work. 2 years ago, when Alabama made the playoff, I thought Florida State should have gotten in over Alabama. I was happy that Alabama got in, but Florida State should have gotten in. Last year, when Alabama was the highest ranked of the 9-3 SEC teams, I thought South Carolina was the most deserving of that group. And I thought Ole Miss even would have been a better matchup for some teams than that Alabama team. This year, Alabama deserves to be in the playoff. And it's wild to me that we are having to sit here and watch national, like respected media members and people that cover the sport that we all care about and do so from a stance of, like, it just is so blatantly biased, like, against a certain conference or a certain team, and they're just locked in on just that. And it's so bad that they, like, the blinders are so thick that the arguments they're making against that team or that conference most of the time is also happening in their own conference or the conference they cover.
No, that's fair. That's all fair. Hey, Emily's got a message for you, Marler. She told me she's going to be nicer to you. Marler, looking good today, but Bama still sucks.
Thanks, Emily. I hate that I missed you guys at stats.
Hey, but hey, how about you haven't really given us any thoughts, and maybe you're just completely over it, but thoughts on Georgia completely dominating Alabama in the SEC championship?
Awesome. Awesome. Just like, I thought Bama's defense played pretty well, to be honest. And that's the end of the talk. I'll say anything about Alabama. I thought, like, what Georgia did and having to exercise those demons and, like, just, like, the size of the monkey that you're trying to get off your back, even though you've beaten them once in 2021, like, every time they come into this game, in this matchup, they've been favored every game since, like, 2020, right? And for whatever reason, no matter the quarterback, no matter the coach, like, anything in between, they have found a way to lose. But I kept saying earlier this year, like, that Bama win was the best win in the country until Saturday night when Indiana beat Ohio State. On the road in a place that, like, Georgia had lost two games in the last 9 years, that's an incredible win. They had ran the ball for 7 yards of carry in that game and then decided to put in their third or fourth string running back to run, like, a misdirection type, not gimmicky play, but weird play on the goal line. And they went for fourth down inside the 5 or 10 yard line twice and didn't get it. Could have kicked a field goal to tie it when they had all the momentum in the world. And you leave that game if you're Alabama. And I was like, thank fucking God they don't have to play Georgia again. And from jump, it was very, very obvious that not only was Georgia the superior team, but, like, you started to see some of the old Georgia teams start to, like, kind of, like, take shape and kind of reemerge. Like, that defense was pretty suspect and not nearly as dominant as past Georgia defenses, like remotely close to that. At the start of this season, especially in games like Ole Miss, and then we saw it against Tennessee. But as the season's gone on, you watch those, like, physically they look the exact same as some of those past Georgia defenses, especially in the linebacker and defensive backs, like unit in the back seven. But they were fucking awesome. Like, I mean, they were awesome. So, you know, I thought it was a really, really impressive one. They dominated in all three phases of the game. I think Bama was very banged up going into that game. I don't think it would have mattered either way. I would have like to have, like, less than 4 or 5 starters out. So maybe they lose like 28-10. But no, it was an incredibly dominant performance from Georgia.
Hey, Brodo, he's got a note for you. He said his grandma had more rushing yards in that game and she's dead.
Yeah. I wish you were too. So, we got in the elevator at the hotel on Sunday. We were leaving and like, I think I was wearing like a Bama hat and the people I was with were in Bama stuff. And this guy, unprompted, goes, "You guys are having a bad day." And I was like, "Thank you." And it got kind of quiet. And I was like, you know, everyone in this elevator right now had more yards rushing combined than Alabama did yesterday. Just brutal, man.
Well, hey, so how about who do you think got the best path here? Among, let's just say the first, the teams that have to play in the first round. Who do you like their path or their seeding the best in the first round of the college football playoff?
In the first, I mean, Oregon for sure. You know what else sucks too is that that Ole Miss Tulane game would have some storylines, but that was already played and it was a complete blowout. And that was before really Trinidad got going. I feel like in comparison to what he is now.
Right.
I like that game for Ole Miss. It'll be interesting to see them against Georgia again, but they will pack out New Orleans for sure. That'll be a fun Sugar Bowl. I really like Miami against A&M. And listen, I'm not trying to discount how good of a team A&M is or how good of a season they've had. And I also think that Carson Beck against elite competition there's a very real track record where he struggles in those moments, especially on the road. But I think that's the most interesting game of the first round, because Miami is coming in well-rested for one, a chip on their shoulder. And the only time we have seen A&M play anyone with a pulse since the Notre Dame game was Texas, and they lost.
Broda says, I don't know what's worse, being dead or having minus -3 rushing yards.
It's definitely minus -3 rushing yards. I wish I was dead on Saturday.
Hey, well, let me ask you this, because I think Georgia got screwed with the seeding a little bit.
Yeah.
They should be 2, but I would almost rather be 3rd, because if you're 2, you're still going to play 3rd in the next round if the favorites win.
Yeah.
And I would rather get Tulane Ole Miss winner than Miami A&M winner.
That's fair. I think that it's a good draw for Georgia. And you're right about that. I think I was just very frustrated when you start looking at and again, you go back to just how inconsistent any of the talking points or ways they were executing the actual rankings themselves all season, but especially in the final ones. Georgia and Ohio State are both 12-1. And one of those teams is very battle-tested to the tune of having the most games against top 25 opponents with 5, the most wins with 4. They just beat Bama. Ohio State has 2 wins against ranked opponents, and one of those is against, who was it, Mike? It was Texas by 7, a team that Georgia beat by 25, and then Michigan. And again, you think about the way a schedule is set up. Everyone talks about how unfair it is about the FCS games in week 13, blah, blah, blah. You imagine walking into a season with that kind of roster and saying, all right, we have a ranked opponent in week 1, and then we don't have another one until week 14. Like, that is that's house money, man.
What do you think will be the best first round game?
Bama, Oklahoma. Or Miami, A&M. Mm. I'll tell you what, if Bama can go in and Ty Simpson looks remotely similar to what he looked like in October or even in the game against Oklahoma, I think that Alabama has a chance to win that game.
Why doesn't he, though? Do you know? I mean, is he hurt?
No, I think he's like seeing ghosts out there for one. I mean, it's a very different, version of him. And I think right. One of the things there's little things this offense should be able to do that I think could kind of quell some of those issues. You look at the game this past weekend, this is not saying that it would have mattered in the outcome at all, but early on in that game, they're down 7, they get the ball at their own 7-yard line and they start driving down the field and they get across the field to the 45 and it's 1st and 10. And he hits, I think it was Isaiah Horton right in the hands on the 32-yard line and it goes right through his hands. And instead of it being 1st and 10 and you're, at least closer to field goal range and feeling good about being able to move the football, that's a drop. Now it's 2nd and 10. They can pin their ears back, and I think they got a pick 2 plays later. Ryan Williams dropping balls constantly. And then again, dude, I think there's so much pressure on him because how many times have we seen this season where it's 2nd and 2 and you are lining up and throwing it on 2 or 3 straight plays? That is it is it's so disheartening if you're watching Alabama, because there's just no physicality.
Let me ask you this. Who do you got more confidence in going into that matchup, John Mateer or Ty Simpson?
That's a good question. I want to say Ty Simpson, but he's also going up against that Oklahoma defense. I'll say Ty Simpson only because I think Mateer can be great. I've said this all year, and Oklahoma fans can get mad about it if you want, but when he is, his normal game is probably 220, 240 yards combined offense, right around 55 to 60% completion percentage, 1 touchdown, 1 interception. Like, And he was playing very well, and they didn't turn the ball over for two straight games against Bama and somebody else in the start of November. But what LSU did to him is what I kind of thought Bama would have done to them in Tuscaloosa. So you remember, like, that game, they had three, Bama had three turnovers, two of them inside their own 30. And Ty was really, really good in the first half of that game. Like, he was like trending towards like a career passing game, and everything just kind of fell apart in the second half. I think they need to figure out ways to not have everything be on his shoulders. Because it's clearly something's wrong.
Something is wrong. And something has been wrong.
Alabama's not as good as their record, and they got lucky in a lot of multiple games. Here's the thing, though. They are as good as their record because that's their record. another one of my favorite ridiculous arguments is being made is all offseason, not even just SEC fans, we will talk about how Auburn is like one of the best, most electric environments. There's nothing like Jordan Hare at night, and that's fair and accurate. Bama went there and barely beat a 5-7 team in their rivalry game. And for whatever reason, that was being compared to the 4-8 Stanford win that Notre Dame had. But just in general, the idea that throwing out that Auburn win is like they barely beat Auburn. Everyone barely beat Auburn. Everyone did. They had seven losses this year. Six of them were by 7 points or less. The biggest like margin of defeat they had was against Georgia, and it was 10 points. Like, it takes a lot for you to stick up for Auburn. But I mean, like, it's just the talking points aren't the same for every team. And I told you this on Saturday, and I don't think you were listening because I was talking. But I think I've come to the realization that people don't really want the SEC to play tougher games, nine conference games, or be held like, you know, out of the playoff because of automatic qualifiers or whatever. They just want to see the SEC lose because they're so fucking tired of hearing about them win for two decades.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I absolutely think that's fair. Hey, all right, let me ask it this way. Of the teams playing in the first round, so this is going to be difficult because I've already seen a lot of projections. They're just going chalk, right? But of the teams playing in the first round, which team do you have the most confidence can make a deep run and maybe even win the championship?
So I know everything I just said, but the answer is Oklahoma.
Ooh.
Because, again, if they can play mistake-free football, that defense is as good or honestly maybe better than any other defense that's not only in the playoff but maybe in the country. And they are so good at getting after the quarterback. They're so good against the run. I mean, there's just dudes everywhere. They're so physical in the secondary, and they're just a very, very well-coached team. So you look at the way the bracket sets up for them, they get Bama at home. There's not going to be any lacking in confidence for Oklahoma going into that game. I mean, they have owned Alabama the last 2 years. Like, beat the shit out of them with a playoff spot on the line for Bama last year, 24-3. And they did that with only having 62 yards rushing. And then this year they went to Bama's house and beat them again. So I think Bama, there's stuff to be said, like, you know, about the mistakes they made in that first game. But on the road, at home, the ceiling for Oklahoma is so much higher than some other teams because if Mateer can play like we saw in September, they can go, I think, a long way. I guarantee you Indiana has not seen a defense like Oklahoma's. Ohio State's got a good defense. I guarantee you they haven't seen a defense like theirs.
How about JR? He says, hey, he's fine with the 3-seed Ole Miss without Lane or Tulane. Please. I mean, he's got a good point there. They should smoke him, right? I mean, they did it once before.
It's, you know, what sucks about this too, man, is there are, I think, three first round or teams in the first round that don't have a coach technically. Or like, or replacing a coach, like both JMU and Tulane, those coaches are out the door. Think about this too, man. Ole Miss has a new head coach who's, I guess he's now their future head coach with Golding, but it's his first career game as a head coach. Oregon's offensive coordinator is leaving to go to Kentucky. Oregon's defensive coordinator is going to Cal to be head coach. JMU's head coach is gone. Oklahoma's fine. Tulane's head coach is gone. Ole Miss's offensive coordinator and head coach is gone.
Ohio Miami State offensive Mario, coordinator, right?
He's coming back to coach, but I'm saying, like, in general, after the game, he's gone. A&M's offensive coordinator is gone. And then Miami has Mario Cristobal, so that's an even bigger uphill battle.
Someone told me this online, Chris. It's in Oxford. It's Tulane versus no Lane.
That's pretty good. I like that.
All right. How about this one? I thought this was pretty funny. Beat the hell out of Miami and good job, Marler. There you go.
Oh, thanks, Derrick Henry.
That's the Derrick Henry, too. Trust me.
Oh.
And J.M. Scott, great content, Mike. Enjoy it. All your SEC scoops out of here in North Carolina. Go, Hogs.
Well, that's a appreciate tough end of that sentence.
And then Dixon, I don't know if this is true, but this is his commentary. Do you think Gunner has an unfair advantage over other quarterbacks because his eyes being so far apart give him an ability to see the whole field? What do you think?
I mean, I will say that we give Diego Pavia a lot of shit for being 25 years old in his 13th year of college, but Gunnar Stockton is 41 years old. He is a 41-year-old. If you told me that Gunnar Stockton was a L.L. Bean catalog model from 1984, I was like, yeah, it tracks for sure. Just woke up. Like, it's like he was born with like a flannel umbilical cord. Just ridiculous.
How about a shout out JM? He gave us another one. In his opinion, 16-team playoff with the top two highest ranked group of five having a play in game for the last spot. Kind of like the basketball tournament. Make them do a playoff to get in the playoff.
I think they should just give them their own playoff. Yeah. It would generate more TV dollars, which is really the only selling point you would need. But I've always said, even when you were at four, like if you went to six or eight, which I thought was the logical next step, whoever was seventh or ninth in those scenarios would have also been just as mad as whoever was third. But here's the other thing too, Mike, we forget that I'm not going to take ownership of this because I was not involved, but college football fans as a whole are to blame for this. And so are different conferences and coaches. The people that got so up in arms about the 2011 Bama LSU rematch instead of Oklahoma State getting in. Like, Bama and LSU were clearly the two best and most talented teams and deserved to be in that game. And neither one of them lost to Iowa State at like an unranked team. And so that happens. And then you think about 2014 when TCU gets left out. And then you think about 2017, I think it was Ohio State. Like all these different years where we've had these like big, big, huge arguments. 2022 when Tennessee and Bama were on the outside looking in, and like Saban went on that fucking terrible ass PR tour about, well, Vegas says we're favored at all these games. Like every year we're going to argue whoever's on the fringe, but we wanted like to keep this thing going. We didn't want the BCS anymore because it didn't make any sense to us. So instead of a computer, a non emotionally charged and just a factually driven thing pumping out numbers that we tell it to pump out. Instead of that, we were like, what if we get 12 people in a fucking room in Dallas for 1.5 months for a fun little summer camp vacation, and they get to go down there and talk about football. Let's get the AD from Nevada. Let's get a SEC guy that makes 6-7 jokes. He's a fucking moron that shouldn't even have a job at his current school. And then sprinkle in some DEI stuff with a couple other hires. Like, let's just knock it out of the park.
Hey, I know you're kidding, but that's basically where we're at.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, you know what I'm not kidding about? Poncho Outdoors. Come on, yeah. Go check them out this holiday season. They're back for another week. Poncho Outdoors /SEC to get $10 off. Chris, this is the only thing from Austin getting into the playoff this year is Poncho Outdoors, Austin-based business. Go check them out. They got you covered over at Poncho Outdoors. That's ponchooutdoors.com, ponchooutdoors.com /SEC. Get $10 off and free shipping. And with the Poncho Promise, Chris, you get free shipping, free returns, free exchanges. Poncho stands by every shirt they sell. I'm gonna sell some to Chris here to level up his wardrobe. I think I'm gonna give him some of the Western polos or maybe the flannels. You seem like a flannel guy in your time off, so go check them out. And then while you're doing that, Chris, I might just update your whole ordeal you got going on there. I'm gonna get you some hollow socks. Go check them out. Hollow socks. .com can't be beat, and they got a deal going on for the cousins right now, Chris. They got buy two get two free over at hollowsocks.com. There's a links for Poncho and for hollowsocks.com in the comments.
Lock on socks.
Yeah, you need something this Christmas season for yourself or for someone you really care about, like Chris. Get you some hollow socks or some Poncho. You know what?
What's going on?
You are quite the salesman. Has anyone ever told you that?
It's not mine to sell.
It is. This is for all of us to say.
Guys, let me also give you a little peek behind the curtain here with this show. Every week, I love Mike to death, so this is also in jest. But every week, there's no one that is cheering harder for Mike's success than me, besides himself. But, like, it's been awesome to watch since we've worked together back in the day and known each other since, like, I first started in the industry. Like, so happy for him and Shane. Told you guys that when I was drunk on Saturday. But every time we get done with the show, he sends me a picture of the total views. And he's like, yeah, we just made another blah, blah, blah amount of money. And this had this many views. And I was like, that's so sick, dude. I got yelled at for 12 minutes because I was being too loud on the podcast in my home. And I forgot to post something I was supposed to do for work.
Right. But I think you're misinterpreting why I'm sending you those things.
Because you're bragging and you're better than me.
No, no, no. I'm trying to show you that if you follow my path, I can lead you to this. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get you. I'm trying to get you where I'm at.
I've done a pretty good job of showing you, not just telling you, but showing you through my own actions for the last at least 5 years that I want no part of success. I would like to get in my way as much as possible and drag it out until I'm in my 40s and already past my prime and miss my window. I'm pretty close right now.
Well, I think that's fair too.
No, I'm just giving you shit. I do appreciate it. What do you want to talk about now?
How about Tennessee?
No.
Moving on from Tim Banks. Right move, wrong move. I mean, hell, a year ago, he was up for the Broyles Award, nation's top assistant coach. This year, they were complete dog shit on defense. How much is that his own Tim Banks? You know, I think the guy got too much hell, but I also think that Heupel had to make some changes because I think, you know, they're at this point, Chris, where they're good, but they're not elite. You know what I mean? That's the hardest part is getting there.
Yeah.
How does Tennessee get there? And what's your thoughts on firing old Tim Banks?
Yeah, for the Broyles Award to be on the broiler because it's hot. And so then he got fired, which is, you guys follow my line of thinking here. I was kind of shocked when I saw that, only because he was so good last year, but also, you know, he had a lot better players last year. Like James Pierce wasn't coming back this year. I tell you what, knowing how petty I am, I would probably walk right into fucking Jermod McCoy's apartment or dorm and be like, thanks a fucking lot, dude. Had to sit there each and every week and put you on the availability report and you never even stepped a foot on the field. I mean, like, I'm not surprised. I think also I kind of love this, not doubling down, but I love this stance from Heupel, who I thought him going to Penn State wouldn't be the worst move because of, like, how long the leash would be there. And like, Penn State fans seeing what an offense is for the first time in their lives, that would be pretty cool. But him staying and him committing to figuring out, like, we got to make changes right away. Like, it's not every coach does that. I thought it was probably, like, the right move and then figure out where to go from here.
And I could be mistaken on this, but I think this is accurate. I think this is literally the first time Heupel has fired an assistant at Tennessee. If that's accurate, what does that tell you? I mean, because to me it says that he's truly committed to realizing that you know they are not close to where they want to be. If that makes sense.
I'm trying to think of who he could have fired like before that would have been justified. But yeah, I mean, if you're right, like that's wild that it took into the end of year five. But yeah, I agree. It's like, it's the same kind of storyline we've talked about with Beamer this offseason, which is like, hey man, you can't just hire your fucking friends. You gotta really commit to this thing like to win. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know where they're going to go, like who they're going to get. I think the more interesting part here is in this carousel, especially our coaching carousel, not only are, like the head coaching jobs that we talk about nonstop, like obviously those are big, but now there's so many different coordinators either looking for jobs or being like trying to like, you know, poach for jobs. It'll be interesting to see where he goes.
Hey, well, speaking of putting together a staff, I know you cover LSU intimately. What's your thoughts so far on the job Lane Kiffin's doing, building this staff, keeping Blake Baker? That was huge.
Mm-hmm.
Keeping him away from, for anybody that doesn't know, he had an opportunity, I believe, to be the head coach at Tulane, yet he's staying on to become, he was already one of the wealthiest coordinators, but I think they're giving him even more money. What's your thoughts on the jobs Kiffin has done thus far?
All right, so shameless plug. I just wrote an article earlier today about, like, just kind of like circling back to all the hires at like a couple weeks ago or whatever it was from, I guess it was six? I guess it's technically six because of Golding. But if you asked me this like a week or two ago, obviously LSU won the coaching carousel getting Lane Kiffin. He was the biggest name. Everybody wanted him. He was, I think, like the biggest trophy out there, and LSU went and landed him. The two most important hires that anyone has made, including all the head coaches in this entire cycle, him retaining Blake Baker and John Summerall going out with Florida and going to get Buster Faulkner. I think those two hires, because you've seen it over and over, over and over again. Like, we talk about how great head coaches are all the time. But the fact of like whoever you hire as a coordinator, you saw it with Pittman. It was like his demise. You've seen it with a ton of different coaches, or just how different it looks like when Saban has, you know, Kiffin and Kirby Smart or Jeremy Pruitt and Sark versus Tommy Reese and fucking Pete Golding. Like, it's a much different thing. Being able, if you're Lane Kiffin, being able to secure a defensive coordinator who, like, he's not, I don't think he's the best defensive coordinator in college football, but he's probably top 10 and he's a very good defensive coordinator. Now you don't have to worry about that because your whole thing is I'm going to put up fucking 35 points a game anyway. So in the same way, that's why I look at Florida and I'm like, you have struggled on offense every single year that Billy Napier was there for all 4 years. Their numbers got worse year over year over year from 2022 to 2025. And now you've got one of the best, not just like creative play callers, but like proven track record, like developers of a quarterback and offensive identity with Buster Faulkner. I think that's the biggest hire that's not a head coach in the entire country.
Better hire, Lane Kiffin at LSU or Billy Napier, JMU?
Oh, I would have liked to see Billy Napier go to Tulane. They sent him to JMU?
Yeah.
Oh,
he's, man, in the playoff. One of them is.
It's definitely
one of them,
Lane,
isn't.
And Lane got his dog back. It's fucking over for you bitches.
hey, someone, they keep asking. I think this is a really good question. Who would you have SEC coach of the year?
Probably Kirby.
Really?
I mean, like, if you want to give one like a sentimental one to like maybe Clark Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Clark Lee, I think if I had to rank him, I would probably put Clark Lee and Kirby in that top one and two. Venables would probably be third.
No love for Coach Elko?
Not as much as the other guys. He would, yeah, probably be right below them. But I mean, I'm more impressed with what
Kiffin did a really good job.
Able to do. What's that?
Kiffin did a really good job. I mean, yeah. Hell, no shot in hell. I thought this team was going to the playoff.
They are two defensive stops away from being 12-0. But I look at Kirby and I think like the way that team looked in the first month of the season, losing to Alabama and having to battle through some injuries, figure out like the run game, the offensive line, like that defense has grown so much, like I said earlier, and no one's had more success with a tougher road in front of them like than Georgia has. I would say Oklahoma's right up there with them in comparison to what they did against, like, you know, top tier teams and ranked opponents and shit like that. And then of course it'll end up going to Clark Lee.
Do you like that he's come out and basically, you know, they asked him, yeah, they asked him, well, in a different way than you, but they said, did you consider opting out like Notre Dame? And he said, no, we love football. I mean, what a sick burn.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I will say, I love Clark Lee to death and I'm so excited for what he's like. He's like committed to staying at Vandy. I think that's really cool what they're doing with Curtis and all that kind of stuff. It's been awesome to watch this like over the past 2 years. And also good on Vandy for like giving him like the length of time needed to figure out like how to be successful and win. Because like a lot of times we see coaches come in and try to fix these like unfixable projects. And if they don't do it in 3 years, they're gone. So, yeah, Elko probably is in that discussion, but like I think he has like the wins that Elko got after Notre Dame are much less impressive than what every single one of those other coaches did. I like the fact that Clark Lee, I love what he said about Notre Dame and the shade he threw. I will also say, if we're being fair, his comment last week was like, "I told our teams, keep your bags packed. We're gonna look for a game." Like, no, you're fucking. No, you're not. Where are you gonna look for a game at? And also, why would their bags still be packed 4 days after they got home from their trip?
Why not? Because they got to be ready to go at a moment's notice. I like the initiative because they knew they weren't getting the respect.
Who are they going to play?
You know what would have been smart?
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
If Notre Dame had any balls, but we know they don't.
I was going to say something very inappropriate, but I'm not. not a lot of Catholics pulling out these days, so good for them.
Hey, and how about this? Via one Chris Marler. Wait a second. You call it Marler Monday, too? That's trademarked, buddy. What? You can't be calling it that.
Who? What are you talking about?
I'm looking at your timeline. It says Marler Monday, and it's an article.
But she didn't trademark that.
I did.
Did you really?
Well, I am now.
If you're making money off my own name, and this is like an NCAA fucking student-athlete situation from the 90s, I'm going to lose it.
You wrote, Florida may have won the coaching carousel with old Summerall. Is it because of the what you were just saying about the offense coordinator you like so much?
Yeah, I just think that the Faulkner hire is huge. It doesn't mean they're going to win necessarily or win right away, but like, man, again, you look at those offenses, like for in terms of points scored per game and yards per game, every year from year one to year four, Florida got worse, both in how many points they scored or allowed, not allowed, how many points or yards they gained. I think they ended up at the final year he was there. They were 115th in scoring offense and like 104th in yards per game. Like it was so egregiously bad, and it got worse every year.
Is it conceivable, now that you're predicting this, because this would be a crazy thing to predict because we don't know anything about the rosters. We don't even know the order necessarily of the schedule. But is it conceivable if Florida keeps their team relatively together with these coaches that Florida could have a better record than LSU next year?
No.
You don't think, huh?
I mean, well, also, if they keep everyone, are they going to be healthy for the, like, that was the most banged up team I have.
What if they upgrade at quarterback?
So that is an interesting like point, because I don't know if Lagway necessarily fits into it. Like, he definitely doesn't fit what the kind of offense they ran at Georgia Tech with Haynes King.
He is the glass Haynes, right?
Yeah, for real. I didn't even think about that part. And then you look at Faulkner's track record before that and like the other stops, like when he was in Athens, he was the quarterback's coach for Stetson Bennett in those 2 years. And I mean, listen, like I think who was the OC then? He's now with like the Ravens. Todd Monken. I would give him probably way more of the credit for how awesome that offense was, plus Brock Bowers and all the other players. But like, you took a two-star kid that nobody wanted and in his seventh year of college turned him into a Heisman Trophy candidate and finalist. So pretty impressive.
Hey, shout out JD. Appreciate you for the donation. In 2017, he says, Auburn lost to Georgia in the SEC championship. We dropped from 2-7.
Yeah.
Same score as Bama, but Bama didn't drop. I'm looking for clarity here, Chris.
So I'll start by saying Bama should have dropped. I was shocked they didn't drop from 9-10. They shouldn't have dropped out, but they should have dropped. I keep seeing this argument, and I don't really get it because that was a completely different scenario. So like, it's like
Auburn beat Bama that year too.
Yeah, and Georgia.
Right. I believe Bama's best win was at Mississippi State that year.
2017? Yeah, it was not a great schedule for them. I think they opened that year with...
Was that the Jimbo Florida State year?
Yeah, and that was like a 1-3. That was supposed to be a big one. I think y'all ended up firing Butch, or what's his name, that year?
Butch. Should have gave him another couple of years, I think.
Probably. But yeah, but also I think that... probably fair to say that they were the right team to get in. I don't know how to argue that with Auburn, because it was a 4-team playoff versus like, and if we're using that argument, the best example hands down is Georgia they were number one in the country in 2023, hadn't lost a regular season game in 3 years, had won 29 straight games. I think they were back-to-back national champs and they lost on a neutral site by 3 points and dropped from 1-6. And was completely left out.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Hey, any rumors, Phil over here, Sellers to LSU? Any rumors on LSU's quarterback next year?
That's a good question.
Have you heard Sam Leavitt at all?
So I thought it'd be an interesting potential with like I'm sure Lane will look into it for sure, because like I think that the way that he plays, like his style of play as a quarterback. He's not as tough, I don't think, as Jackson Arnold, or not Jackson Arnold, Jackson Dart. But like, I think he's got a lot of the same skill set and qualities. So I kind of thought that, like, if they didn't miss out on Lane, going to get Kenny Dillingham with Levitt would have been a home run, you know, plan B, which I don't really like plan B a lot. And Catholics don't either.
Sometimes you have to, you know?
Yeah, all the time. I call it plan A, to be honest. Anyway, no, I don't know who they're going to go after. Van Buren was brought in specifically as a backup, and I think they spent around like $450,000 on him, which for a backup, I maybe that's the market. He was a starter at Mississippi State, but I think you have to go to the portal and get somebody, because I don't think they've signed anybody either. Like Colin Hurley is, I think it's Colin Hurley. One of them went to Syracuse last year. One of them's like 17, and they end up having to take a preferred walk-on from like down the street as well.
Any thoughts on, I know it's not official and it may not happen as far as we know, but South Carolina after Kendall Browse?
I heard it was going to be official today.
Could that keep Sellers, you think? Because he's a very quarterback-friendly system.
I think it would be a really good start. I think it would also be an incredible hire from Beamer if they were able to get him. The offense he runs, what he wants to do, and like how it would fit with Lenore Sellers. I think you could probably open your case in trying to sell him on the idea with, hey, by the way, this type of offense takes away from the offensive line ever having to make like pre-snap checks, any sort of like shifts or anything like they'd have to be responsible for so little than they are right now, because the offensive line's been in front of him has almost gotten him killed for 2 years in a row. Also, how am I Lane Kiffin's bitch?
Yeah. Why are you? Oh, wait. How are you?
Let me count the ways. I'm using the market for a right thumb in the portal.
How about Mississippi State? Have you seen this? Zach Arnett back? Former head coach, former defense coordinator. Now he's back as defense coordinator again.
So I don't know how like white trash you are or your family is. This is like...
You've met Shane, right?
For sure. And I feel like down here, this isn't that uncommon. Like, it's like not as crazy as it sounds, but like, have you ever been to like a family reunion or like Christmas or Thanksgiving and like the aunt that you're not close with who hated her husband and they got divorced, but then all of a sudden they're back together? Like, that is a fucking incredible storyline to follow at the Thanksgiving dinner table. It happened twice this weekend. Brent Pry is going to be the DC at Virginia Tech. And then, what's his name is going to do at Mississippi State. The Mississippi State thing is weird because I thought he got fired too soon anyway.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, he was clearly in over his head as a head coach, and they had good defenses there. They really did. Have you heard the rumor? We probably shouldn't traffic in rumors, but I already went there. I'm pretty sure this is accurate. I mean, it's been reported. Did you hear? So he was supposed to be Dan Mullen's defensive coordinator at UNLV this year.
Yeah, I think that would have been a good setup.
Do you know what happened? Apparently he went through the Wendy's drive-thru naked.
Wait, what?
I swear. And then he got arrested and dismissed.
I did not know that. That's who? That's Zach Arnett?
Yeah, their new Mississippi State defense coordinator.
Think about all the things that have to happen to lead up to that. like you have to, were you naked before you got in the car? How far away was Wendy's? Also, DoorDash is a thing.
Right. I guess he was just looking for a wild time. Yeah, Bacon, Junior Bacon. Gee. Hey, how about someone that you will know, Joe Sloan. Have you seen this? Kentucky's new offensive coordinator. I'm trying to figure out what in the hell they're thinking there.
I don't love that. But, I mean, also, like, he was good 2 years ago. And I think it'll be interesting to see what he can do with Cutter Bowley. I mean, like, Bowley was – he was really good at times, and he was also fucking terrible at times. But like, his terrible was, like, he's just a freshman quarterback in the SEC. So you can see me doing that? Way too lazy for that. Naked in the car? Did he change in the car?
I think he was just butt-ass naked and drove down there. Must have been really hungry.
So many questions.
Maybe he got dared to do it. I don't know.
You know what? I'll tell you a scenario that now that I'm thinking about it, that would make sense to me and where I have been at times, drunk at 2 o'clock in the morning. If I'm hammered and I am slightly inconvenienced and waiting for my food, and you start looking at like Uber Eats, and it's like, be there in 12 minutes. And you look again, it's like, be there in 17, 23, 28 minutes. You're like, what the fuck is going on, Donnell? Bring my food. And then maybe I go up there naked and you know, handle my business. Make it their problem. Jack off with the Frosty machine.
G says the chili hits different.
Yeah, Frosty's nuts.
What is Texas? We haven't talked Texas at all. What do they need to do to get back to the playoff? Will they ever go back to the playoff? Did they find out SEC life is a little hits a little different these days?
1,000%. And like it's something that almost every single team goes through, no matter how good or bad they are. That was my biggest question. I said to you on one of these shows before the season started, like my biggest question about Texas was not how are they going to replace all the offensive line they lost? How are they going to replace all the playmakers and skill position players they lost and whether or not Arch Manning was going to be, you know, as good as everyone thought. But like we see it over and over and over again in the SEC where it's like, whether it's Kentucky or Mississippi State. And in their case, it was both of them where like something happens and you are in a dogfight with a team that you have no business being in a dogfight with. And it happened to him this year. I will say that the crying about the Ohio State game, I mean, again, this is a team that last year finished the season 11-1, went to the SEC championship game, got beat by a backup quarterback, had no ranked wins on their resume going into the playoff, and still got a 5 seed.
Right. And couldn't you make the argument that Oklahoma, I'm not saying they didn't deserve it, but I think they're in large part because they beat Michigan.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I tell you what, we have not talked enough about, and the national media definitely hasn't as well, talked enough about how good of a job Brent Venables did this year. I mean, he went from being one of the most talked about hot seat coaches in the country, and it took Oklahoma, I feel like off to that 5-0 start, and then like everything gets shaky when you lose Mateer, and they looked like, I thought they'd still dog walk Texas, and they got blown out. But the way they closed the season, man, after that loss to Ole Miss, to be able to rally like that, that was very, very impressive. Well, like I said, if wins and losses are all that matter, if Texas plays Mercer to open the year, they're in the playoff now. Again, one of the things that's amazing about this is, go back to the Texas schedule, please. I get that you guys played Ohio State on the road. Look at the rest of the fucking games for a second. You delusional idiots. San Jose State, UTEP, Sam Houston State, Florida on the road, who, by the way, is 4-8. They're fucking terrible. They're terrible. Kentucky, also fucking terrible on the road. Mississippi State, not very good on the road. You were down 17 points in that game. Arkansas, terrible. Like, in the biggest moments you had this year against remotely good teams, and I'll give you credit for Oklahoma, even though the quarterback was injured. You got dog walked by Georgia by 25 points in Athens, and it's your third loss to them in the same year. That and Florida are much more of why you didn't get a chance to play in the playoff. Because if they're 10-2 with a loss to Florida, who are they ahead of, Mike? Like, who are they ahead of?
No, I think you're 100% right.
Fucking right.
As per usual. How about JM? He also said, hey, can anyone help us out here in the SEC? Get rid of Hunter Yurecek. This is embarrassing to the SEC and Razorback Nation. Do you agree?
I don't know how he has a job. That again, him doing the 6-7 reference on live national television when like college football fans are begging you to take this seriously. It's like everyone's tuned in like, okay, so hopefully they're going to have like a little bit more explanation and, you know, of what's going on into the rankings this week. And they tune in and it's Hunter Yurecek just like on delay, goofy ass smile. He's terrible, dude. Terrible. Texas does not have a better strength of schedule than most in the playoff. That is actually untrue. Mm. Oklahoma and Alabama have the two highest. But if there's anything, like this is all a simple Google. And if we're going to talk about this, let's just talk about it in like factual reality. Like, and also Texas wasn't that good of a team. I think we're also forgetting that. They weren't that good of a team. Great win against A&M. Pretty good win against Oklahoma, all things considered. But like, they should have lost to Kentucky, Mississippi State. The way that everyone has talked about these teams in that little like category of 10-2 teams in the playoff, the way the committee, the media, everyone talked about it was, well, they almost lost to this. This is how they looked against inferior competition. you can make the argument that nobody in that group looked worse against inferior competition than Texas did this year. Should have lost to Kentucky against a freshman quarterback on the road. Should have lost to Mississippi State, like down 17 in the fourth quarter. What's the other one I'm missing?
I mean, obviously Florida, but
you know what? They should have been left out, like banned from this year's playoff the moment that Arch Manning flexed on the fucking defender for Sam Houston State in the end zone in week four. Like this wasn't a great football team. I think it's like very fair to say they have some very good wins, but they don't have a higher strength of schedule or strength of record than most or all the teams, like you said. And I don't think they were a great team this year.
And maybe you can make the case, Chris, excuse me, that Sarkisian, maybe the worst coaching job, maybe not the worst, but a bad coaching job. Because if you're good enough to beat Oklahoma, even though the quarterback was hurt, you're good enough to beat A&M, good enough to beat Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
But you lose these other ones.
It's DeBoer last year.
That's coaching issue.
And I think that, like, again, I don't have an issue. I love Steve Sarkisian. And I hope that Arch Manning ends up anywhere close to where some of the preseason hype was for him, because it was unfair, the expectations that everyone put on him from jump. I don't have an issue with Texas as a team at all. My issue with anyone, like in the world of college football, is there are some teams that we talk about very differently than others for no other reason than who they are or what the logo is on the helmet. And that is especially the case for teams like Notre Dame and Texas, but especially with their own media, not fans, their own media. That's like, yeah, we showed up. We deserve to win. We're Texas. We should be in. How'd you fucking barely beat Kentucky, dude? Also, they were gifted the easiest path imaginable to the playoff a season ago.
That's true. This is an interesting comment from Jay Ward. What's Mateer's excuse for LSU? He was hurt for Texas. Who's making an excuse for Mateer against LSU?
Have you heard anyone say that? This is, again, maybe I'm just not communicating well, but I remember when I came on this show before the Bama-Oklahoma game, the whole point I was trying to make was, hey, look, here's the season numbers for John Mateer. He has consistently turned the ball over at least once in almost every single game. The defense he's going up against on the road is currently leading the SEC in forced turnovers and playing their best football, coming off of however many wins in a row against ranked competition. And then the first time all season, they had zero turnovers while forcing three. It was a great, great win, but I don't think anyone's making an excuse for him against LSU.
All right, let me ask you this. Final thing, then.
Let's just keep going and argue with, like, the audience for another 5 minutes.
If Alabama does not turn the ball over against Oklahoma, are they winning in Norman?
I don't know. If you would have asked me this 1 week ago, I would have said yes. Like, immediately, wholeheartedly said yes. But there were so many question marks that came up in that Georgia game, I feel like, where – and again, it is a much different team without all of those players out. I mean, LT Overton, like being out because of blood clots, and you find out the week of, and that's the guy that made arguably the game saving tackle the first time they played Georgia. And then I found out afterwards, Mike, that he was apparently on the punt unit as well. And his replacement, a lot of blocked punt. So if they can get healthy and have a little bit more continuity, like in an offensive personnel that was similar to what they had in, like, October or even the start of November. Yeah. But if they go out there with a fucking third string and fourth string running back and neither one of them can block or catch out of the backfield, they're in trouble.
Did it surprise you at all that Bama's favored?
Yes. Yes. It surprised me more than anything that it was opened at 1.5 and went up to 2.5 immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be in the snow. That actually is, like, my favorite irony from all this is we had to hear Big Ten fans forever be like, them SEC boys, they don't want to come up here and play in the snow. They don't want to play in the cold. Because, you know, like, if there's anything a 6'4", 260-pound, 5-star alien of an athlete is scared of, it's fucking long sleeves. But going to Norman, these two tornado states, playing in a snowball is going to be wild.
All right. Well, hey, I think that's a perfect place to wrap this one up. Chris, you got anything to plug before you hop off here?
I don't have anything to plug, but I'm pretty sure Brother Baggins is going to use his butt plug later. Boom, roasted.
Perfect. See you next time. See you tonight with Steven, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy, this beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.